case is Richard Bowen versus the Department of the Navy, 2010-3065. Mr. Sakani, is it?
Yes.
May it please the court, in this case, the administrative judge denied rebuttal testimony that was necessary to perform a clear and convincing analysis under GAIR. We had a specific rebuttal witness who would testify that the deciding official in a past instance threatened to terminate him in response to allegations that he made against the Naval Facilities Engineering Service Center.
This question comes to us with a great deal of deference being owed to the lower tribunal. In what sense was there an abuse of discretion in refusing to permit this testimony?
Well, I think the testimony would show that the NFPSC and specifically Richard Messock had hostility towards whistleblowers in a previous action, and with regard to the second GAIR factor, that was necessary in order to perform the actual retaliatory motive of the deciding official.
But that was an action that occurred, some 7-8 years prior to the incident in question here, correct?
I believe that's correct, but I think that the administrative judge has still heard it, and then given its weight, whatever he decided to credit, rather than denying a whistleblower a full and fair hearing. I mean, in this case, it's pretty clear that Mr. Bowen was terminated within 9 months of making allegations against the NFPSC. Mr. Arid and Mr. Bowen were, it's our position that they were similarly situated. Mr. Messock was the deciding official, was the first-line supervisor of Mr. Arid in the past, and he was the second-line supervisor and deciding official
in this case. It's a single individual piece of testimony in the past, and it hardly indicates a habit or routine.
I think we let go of the habit or routine evidence at the full board level. And this level, I mean, Mr. Bowen's contention is that this was a designed removal, in that it was planned, so that
what was planned?
The removal itself. Correct. Pretty much that they set him up to fail. Like with regard to the
So you're arguing that this evidence that was excluded would show that this same deciding official regularly engages in these plans to remove people because 7 or 8 years ago he did a similar thing to somebody else?
No, but we're trying to show the design was similar. Not that that indicates a pattern, but only that it lends credence to Mr. Bowen's position that he was set up to fail. Everything stemmed from the assignments that he claims that he couldn't complete. They were assignments that were theoretical in nature. He was idled and not given the resources that he had generally been given in the past 6 years with the Navy.
Of course, you're not challenging the merits. You're just challenging the exclusion of the testimony.
It's difficult to challenge the merits without the actual testimony creating the inference of the retaliatory motive.
As Judge Lynn points out, you've got a pretty high hurdle on exclusion of testimony. Have you done a search of our cases to see how often we overrule a trial official on exclusion of evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. I've seen that it's a very high burden.
It didn't take you very long.
In this case, I think that this evidence is really key.
Have you found a single case where we have decided that the board abused discretion in excluding evidence?
No, Your Honor. However, maybe this is the first. I think it's pretty clear that if this type of testimony was allowed in, it would slant and cast the evidence that the agency provided against Mr. Bowen into a different light. I think that...
But I thought you said you relinquished that argument. I thought you were focusing now on this evidence being used solely to impeach the witness of the government.
Well, it's used to impeach, but it also went to the second factor of the clear and convincing analysis, which would, where we need to show the actual retaliatory motive of the deciding official.
Why would what this deciding official did with regard to someone else 7 years ago show that he had a retaliatory motive in this case with regard to Mr. Bowen?
It would show hostility towards whistleblowers, and that fact coupled with the fact that he knew about the whistleblower allegations that Mr. Bowen would made would show that there could be hostility towards him because he is a whistleblower in this matter. And it's similar to the Sheehan v. Navy user discrimination evidence.
Under Federal Rule of Evidence 404, isn't a single bad act inadmissible? You have to be able to show a pattern.
Well, this isn't being used to show a pattern. It's being used to show motive or intent.
But not his motive and intent via this defendant. His motive and intent, arguably, with regard to Mr. Arad?
Well, the motive and intent with regard to Mr. Arad was to show a specific instance where what we're trying to do is infer that, in general, that they're hostile towards whistleblowers,
isn't
specifically because...
Isn't that... In general, they're hostile towards whistleblowers. You're trying to use one prior example of hostility. Even if I credit you that the testimony is 100% what you say it is, you're showing one prior hostility towards whistleblower and trying to use that to demonstrate, therefore, he would be hostile to all whistleblowers. Well, that's Rule 404, which is a habit or a pattern of activity proves the case at hand. And the court excluded it, saying one instance under the law of the Regional Circuit can't amount to a habit.
That's correct. However, I'm looking at it in a different light. We're looking at it in a different light. We're not looking at it in a light of this is a pattern. We're looking at in a light where we're comparing two statements that were very similar that were made against the NFESC and two responses that were very similar. However, not calling that a pattern, only calling that a design. And secondly, it goes to discredit the deciding official in this case, where he says that he had never taken any action against any whistleblowers in the past, and that's clearly not the case. I mean, because we have this gentleman, Mr. Steve Verrett, who says that he was retaliated against when he made allegations, and Mr. Messock learned about those allegations made against NFESC. And then I think that plays into the fact that Mr. Messock had said that Mr. Bowen's conduct was really egregious, and I think it tends to discredit them because Mr. Bowen contends that he was set up to fail with regard to the work assignments, and the NFESC knew about his gripe that he had with the individually billed account, and they pushed it when in the past 6 years he had an informal exemption with the command, which said, well, you just need to carry this individually billed account credit card, and it's okay, we won't make you use it. But within a few months of him actually going out and making these allegations, they started pushing him about it, and they knew that he had this gripe because when he started with his second round with the Navy 6 years before, he told them, I have this gripe with this individual bill account, and they said, don't worry about it, would you just carry it just for, just to have it, and he never even activated it for the entire 6 years until they started pushing him about it, which was only a few months after he actually made those allegations. So, I understand that the pattern argument is weak. However, I don't think that in this case we're arguing a pattern. We're only arguing that the deciding official should be discredited and that Mr. Bowen was set up to fail and that this type of testimony, if allowed in, would give some credence to Mr. Bowen's argument that he was set up to fail. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
We will save it for you, Mr. Sacani. Ms. Allison Kidd-Miller.
For the government.
Thank you.
Thank you, and may it please the court. This court should affirm the decision of the board and find no clear and harmful abuse of discretion in the administrative judge's decision to disallow the rebuttal testimony of Mr. Arrett.
What if it was simply offered for impeachment purposes? I don't remember the first one, the supervisor's name.
Mr. Messick.
Mr. Messick. He said that he had never done this before, this has not happened before, and then they specifically asked him about whether he made this statement to the prior employee about, you know, I can fire you within 30 days. And he says, no, I never made that statement. Well, why shouldn't they be allowed to introduce the witness to say, don't believe anything he says on anything, i.e. typical impeachment evidence, because he's a liar. Look, he says he never made this statement to me, and he made it to me. So apart from using the evidence for purposes of establishing a habit, why can't they at least use the evidence to argue that he's a liar?
My answer will focus on one of the federal rules of evidence, but of course before going to that specific, it's important to keep in mind that federal rules of evidence do not govern in board proceedings, rather they are helpful guidance to the board. But given that standard, Rule 613B, which pertains to impeachment by contradiction, gave Mr. Bowen the right to confront Mr. Messick, which he exercised. However, it does not allow for the introduction of extrinsic evidence on rebuttal purely for purposes of impeachment. In other words, Mr. Bowen was allowed to confront, but he had to take the answer that Mr. Messick gave him. He was not permitted to introduce extrinsic evidence unless it also had some purpose other than purely attempting to challenge Mr. Messick's credibility. Mr. Bowen seems to recognize that in his reply brief when he, this is at page 2, disclaims that he did not wish to contradict Messick simply for the sake of contradiction, but rather he was trying to introduce evidence of this intent and motive as relevant to the second Guyer factor. Of course, here, the out of the three Guyer factors, only two were at issue, the motive, any motive to retaliate, and then the strength of the evidence in support of the removal. Here, the evidence in support of the removal is uncontested on the basis of three different charges, one of which, the insubordination charge, has an intent element, and the administrative judge found and the board affirmed that the misconduct here was, in fact, intentional. That is not disputed on appeal. And that strength of that evidence was sufficient to carry this case. In other words, even if Arrett had been allowed to testify, even if Arrett had convinced the administrative judge that there was some, to use Mr. Bowen's words from his brief, it tended to create an inference of retaliatory motive. That's what he says he was attempting to prove. Even so, this evidence on the first Guyer factor provided a sufficient basis for the clear and convincing determination that the agency would have taken the same action in any event. So given that misconduct, it was surely within the administrative judge's discretion to decide that nothing was to be gained by hearing testimony from this rebuttal witness who had in any event been denied during the case in chief. And for these reasons, unless there are further questions from the court, we ask you to affirm the decision below.
Thank you, Ms. Kidmiller. Mr. Satani has some rebuttal time.
With respect to the evidence, there's substantial evidence that they could have removed him, but there isn't substantial evidence that they would have removed him but for the whistleblower allegations. The whistleblower allegations are what spawned Mr. Bowen's contention that he was idle, that he was pushed with regard to the individual account, that he wasn't allowed to travel because he apparently hadn't completed these assignments that were apparently critical, but he couldn't complete because he was a program manager who's used to having contractors and resources, and he wasn't allowed to have those resources. So although there may be evidence that he could have been removed based on the evidence, I think that if allowed, Steve Arrett would tend to indicate that Mr. Bowen wouldn't have been removed because the administrative judge could find that he wouldn't be able to prove, or the agency wouldn't be able to prove by clear and convincing evidence that they would have removed him, in that there wouldn't be a firm belief in the trier of fact. With respect to the extrinsic evidence, we're contradicting Mr. Massock specifically with regard to an instance that the AJ allowed us to go into, in my opinion, presumably, in order to show the motive and intent of the deciding official in a previous instance, which would show a general hostility. And therefore, in my opinion, and Mr. Bowen's position is that the evidence would be allowable underneath 404B as proof of intent and motive. So therefore, that's an independently allowable basis, and in this case, it's not a collateral matter. Finally, I think that there's a public policy issue in that we want to have whistleblowers to keep making whistleblower allegations. We don't want to chill and curb whistleblower speech by not granting a whistleblower the full fair hearing that they deserve. So in this case, it would have taken all of 30 minutes to an hour to hear Mr. Arad speak and to hear what he had to say. And if the judge didn't think that it had any merit, then he could have just thrown it out. But rather than doing that, he just denied rebuttal witnesses at the end. He just concluded the hearing, didn't allow oral argument, didn't allow anything. The hearing was scheduled for 3 days, but instead of 3 days, it just ended up being a day and a half. I mean, even the agency wanted to introduce some testimony that they weren't allowed to show.
So you want us to micromanage the proceeding below?
No, but I'm just trying to paint a picture of as to what occurred. I mean, we didn't even have the opportunity to present an hour of evidence, which, you know, potentially could have resolved any appeals as to that. I mean, if we got that evidence in, maybe we don't even come here and make this appeal. However, in my opinion, Mr. Arad's testimony is key to our case. I mean, we thought it was key to our case going in, and we still think it's key to our case. And I think if we can get a remand and get Mr. Arad in there to rebut the specific instance, and I think that the AJ has to go in and do a different analysis on the clear and convincing standard, and I think that it could turn in our favor.
Thank you, Mr. Sakani. We'll take the case under advisement.